Hello and welcome to DebtWire. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's episode is titled Puerto Rico at a Crossroads, 10 years after the fiscal crisis. Joining me today is David Skeel, professor at the University of Pennsylvania Carey Law School, former chair of the Financial Oversight and Management Board of Puerto Rico, and author of Promised Land, a book reflecting on Puerto Rico's debt crisis, restructuring, and the lessons of the oversight process. David, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
So David, it's been roughly a decade since Congress passed the Puerto Rico Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act, better known as PROMESA, and created the Financial Oversight and Management Board. Puerto Rico has since restructured tens of billions of dollars of debt, but major questions remain around economic development, governance, energy infrastructure, and the island's return to the capital markets. David, let's start with the book. Why did you choose the title Promised Land, and what do you hope readers take away from it?
Let me start with Promised Land, the title. In a very real sense, the Puerto Rico crisis is all about promises. Promises made, promises kept, promises not kept. And this is in at least three different ways. First is historical. In 1898, when the United States first acquired Puerto Rico, a lot of Puerto Ricans thought that they had been promised eventual statehood, that they were on the path to statehood. 1952, Puerto Rico passed and Congress approved its own constitution. A lot of Puerto Ricans thought that that dramatically changed the relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States. Puerto Rico became a commonwealth. A lot of people in Puerto Rico thought that that made a difference and that Puerto Rico had more autonomy as a result. So there have been a number of historical promises. The second reason that that Promised Land seemed to me an appropriate title is that the 2016 legislation that you just described began with a promise. The promise arose because Paul Ryan, who was then the Speaker of the House, didn't have enough Republican votes lined up to get a must-pass spending bill through Congress at the end of 2015. To get it through, he had to make a deal with Nancy Pelosi, who was the minority leader then. Nancy Pelosi promised to round up 100 Democratic votes in return for some Democratic priorities. Puerto Rico was one of those priorities. It did not get into the legislation. And it's kind of a compensation for that. Paul Ryan promised that he would make sure there was a responsible solution to the Puerto Rico crisis in the next 3 months. He didn't quite make the three-month deadline, but PROMESA was passed just a few months later. The final reason that the book is called PROMESA is the legislation, which you just gave the full title of and referred to, I think, as PROMESA, is PROMESA. That means promise in Spanish. And the promise was a promise that Congress would help Puerto Rico out. And what they did to help Puerto Rico out was to create this 7-person oversight board, give the oversight board the power to restructure Puerto Rico's debt, and also the power to certify fiscal plans to balance the budget. As far as takeaways of the book, there are two kinds of takeaways that I'm most concerned about. One is simply that this was one of the great bankruptcy battles and debt crisis dramas of the last century, the restructuring of Puerto Rico's debt. It was a little bit like Caesar's Palace Coup, the book that came out a few years ago, a little bit like Smartest Guys in the Room, Bethany McLean's book about the Enron crisis. And so one takeaway is just that it's a fascinating story, and I hope folks will read it. The other is that the options that were available to Congress with Puerto Rico to respond to the Puerto Rico crisis are the same options that are going to be available if Chicago is unable to meet its obligations, if Illinois or another state can't meet its obligations, and to some extent, even if the U.S. Debt spirals out of control. So the Puerto Rico crisis is really a case study of what your options are when there is a big debt crisis.
So David, I just want you to know, you called your book Promesa, but I know the title is Promised Land. So I want to make sure everybody out there gets it right. I know you've been with the board a long time, so it's easy for that to happen. But Promised Land is definitely the name of the book. So I wanted to go on to my next question is, looking back on your time as chair of the Financial Oversight and Management Board, what are the biggest lessons from Puerto Rico's restructuring?
Let me mention three kinds of lessons briefly. One is, there's an old cliche about military battles that the most elaborate and most brilliant battle plan never survives the first shot in a battle, that you always end up having to do something very different from what you imagined. That was really true in Puerto Rico. We came in, we had three-year terms. We really thought we could restructure the debt in 3 years, that the board wouldn't be around a lot more than 3 years, maybe four or five. But a year into our time, Hurricane Maria hit. 2 years after that, a governor of Puerto Rico was forced to resign. There were earthquakes. There was another hurricane. There was the pandemic. And so it turned out to be a lot different and a lot more complicated than we thought. So one takeaway is simply it never plays out the way you think it's going to play out. A second takeaway has to do with the oversight board that was put in place. This was not a new strategy. It's something that was done in New York City in the 1970s, in Washington in the 1990s, in Detroit with an emergency manager in 2013. One thing that really became clear in Puerto Rico is that there's a big trade-off between the powers of the board and democracy. The more power you give the board, the easier it is for the board to do what it's there to do, but the greater the intrusion on the democratic process and the greater the interference with democratically elected lawmakers. In our case, Congress weakened our powers a little bit because they were rightly concerned about colonialism, that the imposition of a board was colonialist. We had weaker powers than some other boards, such as the Washington Board or the Detroit Emergency Manager, and it did make it more complicated for us. It made it harder for us to get done what we were there to get done. So there's a real trade-off with a board. How much power do you give them? How much do you try to protect the democratic process? The final big lesson for me is bankruptcy was untested on this kind of a scale. There had never been, we don't have a bankruptcy process for states or for territories, didn't have one before PROMESA. It's a real question whether bankruptcy could work with a government this big. And I think the takeaway is it does, and it can. There was a significant restructuring of Puerto Rico's debt that was completed in 2022. The restructuring shored up the pension system, which was wildly underfunded, $40 billion underfunded at the government's central government level. So it really showed, I think, that bankruptcy can work. And that would be the third big takeaway for me.
So, David, before we go any further, I have to say, I never heard that analogy you started with at the beginning about how everything changes in a war with the first bullet. I think that's very, That's very instructive.
I wish I could say that I made up, you know, I came up with that idea, but it's something that I heard a few years ago, and I had the same reaction. It's really true, I think, that you spend a lot of time thinking about it, coming up with plans. And in fact, when I interviewed for the board, I was nominated by Senator Mitch McConnell, who was the majority Senate leader then and picked by President Obama. When I interviewed, I was asked what the board should do, you know, in the first couple months of being in place. And I had this whole set of ideas, you know, that we should talk to each of the parties and make clear that there were tight deadlines. And if you came around, if you agreed to us, you'd get a better deal than if you resisted. You know, we had all these ideas. None of them went into effect once the process actually started.
But that's a great segue to my next question. How should we judge Puerto Rico's progress 10 years after the fiscal crisis?
Well, 10 years into the fiscal crisis, and you know, if it's 10 years after the board is gone, or 10 years after now, let's say. I mean, I think it would be stunning if the board is still around 10 years from now. There are a couple of things that I would look at. One is, did the legislature in Puerto Rico take ownership of its fiscal responsibilities? You know, what in the years before PROMESA, there were 16 straight unbalanced budgets. The budgets are now balanced because the board has come in place. The thing to watch is, does that continue? Does the legislature continue to be fiscally responsible and to balance its budgets, or does it go back to its old habits? The other thing to look for, I think, is something that you mentioned at the outset, and that's just, does Puerto Rico have access to the capital markets? If Puerto Rico is able to tap the capital markets going forward, that will be another sign that the crisis has been addressed and the problems have been truly fixed.
Does it, because that actually brought up another question in my mind about the audits, their financial audits. Does it, well, let me step back and say, there's a lot of governments that file late, right? They're supposed to file within 6 months and maybe it takes 12 months. You know, in Puerto Rico, it's gone a bit extended period of time. Does that concern you? Would you like to see it get to a point where they're able to file after 6 months, or is it, that's tangential? Like, where do you see that, you know, the financial reporting with
this? Financial reporting is absolutely essential. You know, and in fact, if you had asked me the question, if you had not asked the question, where is Puerto Rico going to be 10 years from now? I'm kind of assuming by then they will have their audited financial process in order. If you had asked the question, what do they need to move beyond the oversight board? Well, the answer that PROMESA gives is there have to be four straight balanced budgets. Once there are four straight balanced budgets and Puerto Rico has access to the capital markets at reasonable rates, the board's work is done. They don't have that now. Their most recent audited financials, I believe, are 2023. And so we don't know if they have a balanced budget yet. The budget for fiscal year 27 may be balanced. You know, it's even possible that the 26 budget was balanced, but we don't know because we don't have audited financials. And until you have audited financials, the board's not going to be gone, and you really can't do any of those other things I was talking about. Having audited financials produced, as you said, within 6 months of the end of the fiscal year really is a preliminary step to moving into the future.
So let's talk about the future as the last question I have for you. Looking ahead to the next decade, what gives you the most optimism? And on the flip side, what gives you the most concern?
I could turn that into a very long answer, although I think there's some short answers. Short answers as well. In terms of optimism, one big thing that gives me optimism is the debt part of the problem, with one exception that I'll get to in a minute, really has been addressed and really has been solved. The restructuring of the Commonwealth's debt in 2022 dramatically reduced the debt load going forward down to a maximum of $1.15 billion a year, which is something like 6% of Puerto Rico's own source revenues. There is not going to be a problem with that debt going forward. And the restructuring plan significantly restricts debt for 10 years as well. So the debt situation is in good shape. The pensions are now in good shape. The pensions have been shifted from a defined benefit, which is promises that are made for the future that aren't always funded properly as they weren't for Puerto Rico. It's been shifted to defined contribution, where the contributions are made every month, every paycheck on the paycheck. So one source of real optimism is the debt problem, at least in the near term, has been solved. The pension problem has been solved. And there are some pieces in place that I think will help a lot with fiscal responsibility. There's been civil service reform in the hiring process in the government. There's a lot more transparency now. We require that the government's cash position be reported regularly, and that that other reports be given. So all that is good. The legislature hopefully is on its way to having a better budget office, both in the governor's office and in the legislature. So all that is grounds for optimism. Grounds for concern, a ground for concern is just that a lot of this could get thrown out the window. The debt situation is not going to get worse, but there is a risk that the government will become fiscally irresponsible again. I hope that's not going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's possible that it will. The really big concern right now, though, is the electricity company, PREPA. PREPA was a mess when PROMESA was passed, even after private operators were brought in to deal with the transmission and distribution, to deal with the old power plants. It still hasn't been fixed. It's still in bankruptcy. PREPA filed for bankruptcy in 2017. It's still in bankruptcy. That really is the biggest concern, I think, is PREPA needs to be fixed. At one of our very earliest meetings, before I really knew anything about what was going on, I said, PREPA is the straw that stirs the drink for Puerto Rico's economy. And what that was a reference to an old statement by Reggie Jackson when he played for the Yankees, when he said he was the straw that stirred the drink. And my point was that you really have to have reliable, affordable electricity for everything else in the economy to be working. As we know, from Bad Bunny's Super Bowl halftime show, among other things, PREPA is not working now. And so that really is my biggest concern going forward.
So for our audience that may not be as familiar with Puerto Rico as we are, PREPA stands for the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority. David, first, I want to thank you for this thoughtful discussion on Puerto Rico. Two, I hope your book does very well, and not because I'm plugging the book, because I personally believe that this is a subject, Puerto Rico and this restructuring, that has faded from the public eyesight. And I hope that the book could be a catalyst to bring it back to the forefront, because as you pointed out, other cities that are struggling, obviously states can't file for bankruptcy, but I remember a time not that long ago when people didn't think Chicago would ever, that was laughable. to think that Chicago could end up filing for bankruptcy like Detroit. So I'm not predicting something's going to happen with the states, but I think when we don't look at all the possibilities and examine history, we're doomed to repeat it. So I appreciate you taking this time with us and the engaging discussion on Puerto Rico's recovery, the legacy of PROMESA, and the path ahead. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, or subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on DebtWire.